Welcome to the Book Club, the show that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. Here's your host, John Austin.
Thanks, Lee, and we have one of our best shows ever today. A fantastic coming-of-age novel, and then a tongue-in-cheek black comedy on the second half of our show. But we begin with a book, and as I've told people before, I like all of the books that we have on the program because I pick them all. So I like them. But once in a while, I come across a book that is so good that it actually needs special mention. River's Ebb is one of those books. It's the story of a young man growing up in West Texas and the people who mold him into the man he will be. The author is Jim H. Ainsworth. Jim Ainsworth spent his formative years in the Texas Panhandle. Later in life, he made a covered wagon and horseback trip across Texas to retrace the journey that his ancestors had made two generations before. And he is an award-winning author of seven other books. Welcome to the Book Club, Jim.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am so happy that you're here. This book, I said it's a kind of a coming-of-age book, but it's much more than that. This book takes place in the late 50s in West Texas, and it is, I mentioned to Jim, one of my favorite books of all time is How Green Is My Valley, or How Green Was My Valley, and this book does for, I think, West Texas what that book did for Wales and the coal mines there. Anyway, Jim, let's start with a synopsis of River's Ebb.
River's Ebb takes place, like I say, starts in 1958 when a family has been suffering. One son has been accused of murder and it never really went to trial and was absolved of that. But they've lost their farm in northeast Texas due to 7 years of drought, and they moved to West Texas. And as circumstances would have it, the young Jake Rivers has barely got his driver's license. He's got a learning permit. He's 14. And he's supposed to come out there with his Navy brother, but his Navy brother kind of is a wild child, and Jake winds up driving out there on his own, and it begins a story where he gets lost in a snowstorm, and going from northeast Texas to the Panhandle is like moving from one country to another. It's totally, completely different.
Right.
And this just takes Jake through 1961, 1958, 3 years of really formative years where he has those coming-of-age experiences, and he has to go to two different schools, and he is small for his age, and he gets bullied quite a bit, but he's a pretty good athlete. And, of course, he gets involved with his first love affair, and this book goes all the way through that. It's hard to describe. It's hard to put a pinpoint on even where it would fit on a bookstore shelf, but that's kind of the general idea.
Well, I can describe it. It's a terrific book. I mean, it's a really terrific book. Well, let's talk a little bit about the protagonist, who is Jake Rivers, and I'm guessing I did ask you this because I figured that you are Jake Rivers.
I always speak of him in the third person, but certainly this is somewhat autobiographical fiction. So the first book I ever wrote, Jake was the protagonist, and I was afraid to write of anything else that I didn't know a lot about. So
okay. Well, he's a great character. And let's talk about Rance and Maddie. Now, they have already moved, and Jake is driving out to see them because they now have a new place in West Texas.
Yes, just an unusual set of circumstances where he and they go ahead, and it's a new thing for Rance too. Rance and Maddie have lost everything, and through the help of one of their relatives, they're able to lease some land out there and start all over again, raising a few cattle and farming on a different, completely different scale than they had before. They were cotton farmers, and now they're wheat and maize farmers, and they raised dairy cattle, and now they're raising beef cattle. So it's just as scary for Rance and Maddie as it is for Jake, but of course Jake doesn't know anything but a 14-year-old knows, and
right.
life revolves around him.
Okay, and Rance and Maddie actually are, as I should have mentioned, that it's his father and mother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then there's a cowboy out there that he meets, String. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, this guy's real name is Harvey Stringfellow, and he's based on a cousin-in-law of mine that I always admired, and the first day that Jake is out there, he looks out his window, and it's very, very cold. He's not used to this kind of cold, and there's snow on the ground, a heavy snowfall. And he looks out, and there is a windmill and a water tank, and there's a fella breaking the ice on the water tank, and he strips down naked and jumps in the ice, the water in the hole that he's jumped in. So that was the introduction to Harvey Stringfellow that everybody calls String. I thought that was based on a real incident, and I didn't think anybody would believe it, but I know it happened.
Okay.
And he's that kind of guy. He's a real crusty, lean as a slab of bacon kind of guy who's a real, real cowboy, and Jake is a great admirer of cowboys.
Okay.
He gets to be a mentor for Jake.
Yeah, you know, this has nothing to do with the plot, but I had never heard this before, but in the water tank has goldfish in it, and they're there for a reason.
Yeah, Jake was surprised at that, too, but it's a common occurrence out there in the Panhandle, and I'm assuming it still is. They keep the algae out of the water. So when the cattle come up and drink, they drop stuff off their mouths and noses and whatever, and it feeds the goldfish.
Okay.
And they swim around in there, and you can see them. The water's clear.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to meet two new characters, and the one is a terrific character. It goes throughout the book, and Jelly is not. But this is Nakona Wells and his pal Jelly. Tell us about them.
Well, actually, they're brothers. They're adopted brothers. Nakona is a full-blood Indian, and he's been adopted by a white couple, and he is a classic Indian, and he is based on, again, on a true character. He has the wide face, the high cheekbones, the straight black hair, and he is a ladies' man extraordinaire, and he is very confident and a fighter and athlete. So Jake looks up to him. Jelly, on the other hand, is called Jelly for a reason. He's soft. He's red-complected. Not to knock that, but he's just a kid that they don't look like brothers, and he's got a little chip on his shoulder. But Nakona has to protect him a lot, and he also winds up protecting Jake a lot. He becomes his mentor, as he said, but Jake learns a few things from him that are not so good, but he's always there to help him when he needs it.
All right. And then Jake meets, actually, I think, the fellow that is the main protagonist in the book, and that's Mike Drager.
Mike Drager. First day in school, he accidentally sits they have an assembly in the auditorium, and he accidentally sits in Mike Drager's seat in the auditorium. And of course, he's a new kid, and he's little, and Mike is a big basketball and football star, and he grabs him up out of the seat, and Jake, in self-defense, takes a swing at him, and they go after it, and Jake almost gets thrown out of school as a result.
Okay. All right, and then that leads up to actually a fight between Nakona and a fellow named Steve Weston. And then as Drager and his boys watch, and Jake actually becomes Nakona's second because Nakona hands him a koo stick. Tell us that story.
Yeah, it was. That's also based on a real event. I did fictionalize it a little bit, but Nakona and Jake rode the same bus, and they lived not too far apart out there. Not too far is about 15 miles, but they lived out in the country and rode the same bus. And they also rode the bus with this Steve Weston's sister, and Nakona had been flirting with her and saying some things that were a little off color. And so the other one is a boxing champ. Steve is a boxing champ, and he just basically tells him to lay off. And Nakona says, "Hey, I'll meet you in the gym." And they meet in the gym, and he asks Jake to go with him. Jake doesn't want to, but he comes completely. They've been kidding him and teasing him about being an Indian and calling him Redskin and Chief and whatever. So he comes out and dresses in full Indian regalia and carries his koo stick. And Jake holds the koo stick, and he says, "If they kill me, before they kill me, you take a swing with that thing." And so Nakona is getting whipped pretty solidly by the boxing champ, but he manages to fight a little dirty and jumps on Mike Drager instead of Steve and grabs him in places where you don't want to grab, and that ends the fight.
Okay. For those of you who don't know, koo stick is what the Indians used to, if that was a sign of bravery, if they touch their enemy with this acoustic.
Right.
Okay. Now, basically, kind of that's kind of comes to the end of that high school, because now Jake actually has a chance to go to a new school, and so yeah, there's in the book. Jake is going to get a new outfit, and then there's a party, and then this new school. Tell us something about that, because then I want to talk about a couple of the ladies that are in there, or a couple of the girls that are in there.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, Jake is miserable in this new school. It's basically 10 times bigger than the one he was used to going to, and he was bullied a little bit, and the only friend he made was Nakona. He spends a lonesome summer, and he's not dressing the part that they dress in the Panhandle. The Panhandle boys all wear boots. They all wear at that time they wore those piped Western shirts, and it was very popular to have the mothers make those, and they were elaborate, enormous yokes, and they would go down all the way to the waist, and Jake didn't have any of that. He didn't even have a pair of anything but work boots. So his mother takes him to the little Adrian Mercantile. Adrian is a little small town almost on the border of New Mexico, small little bitty town. They take him to the Mercantile and buy him his really first set of nice Justin boots, and his mother buys some of these shirts because she doesn't really know how to make that shirt. And so he goes with a yellow cowboy shirt with the piping, a brown piping, and he's fancy, and he's got on his new boots and a new resist-all hat, which he had never had that nice a hat before. So he goes to the party and starts meeting his new friends. Now, he lives in this new school district. He lives in that inside that district. He only went to the big school because he had to finish a year, so it was natural for him to transfer the next year.
Okay. And then now we meet, actually at the Mercantile, we meet Sage, who is the daughter of the owner.
Correct. She actually creases his hat, much to Jake's chagrin. He doesn't want a little girl who looks 12 to him. She's actually just almost as old as he is, but he doesn't want her creasing his hat. But she is an expert at it, and her daddy owns the store, and so they make that little acquaintance. And she happens to show up at the party too, and he finds out then she's a year behind him in school. He's going to be a sophomore, and she's a freshman.
Okay, and then he meets the hot one, and this is Loretta in the at the party.
Yes. Loretta is the opposite of Sage. She is the also the quintessential wild child, and she's also the school's best female athlete, and she's also a preacher's daughter. And she's not supposed to be at the party, but she is she lures Jake onto the dance floor, and she's not supposed to dance, but she is really good at it. And she titillates Jake and gets him around behind the building and gives him his first real kiss and get something going there, and the little Sage, the innocent little Sage, comes up and kind of warns him at the end, but it's the beginning of what he sees is going to be. He's already made more friends there than he did in the whole 6 months he was in the big school.
Okay.
In one night.
Well, then he gets to the school, and there's another fight, and this time it's with a guy named Bert Donovan.
Yeah, there's always a kind of a bully or the tough guy in school, and Jake never intended to intimidate or to antagonize Bert Donovan. Bert is a guy that he looks the part. He's got a few missing teeth, and but there's a little dodgeball game, and this is a game that the small guys can really excel at. And Jake is pretty good at dodgeball, and he bloodies this guy's nose, and the guy just Bert comes up to him in the locker room while Jake is undressed, and basically says, I guess I'm just going to have to whip you. It was just a matter-of-fact thing to him because he was the toughest guy in school, and this little guy, twerp, had come along and embarrassed him. So he said, I guess I'm going to have to whip you. And Jake talked him out of it. He has been practicing fighting. He's not a tough guy, but his brother has regularly whipped him since he was 6 years old. So he's not unused to fighting, and he told this guy that. And he said, you probably whip me, but it's probably going to be embarrassing for you because you're not going to whip me that bad. And Bert and him finally made a truce.
Okay. Then we actually, this is one that neither one of us had. We had both had a problem with the guy's name. But we introduce a coach, a guy named Watson.
And Watson, yeah.
Right, and there is a two-on-one basketball game that's exciting, but I don't want to go into that because I want to make sure we can get through most of this stuff because this book is so good. I promise you, folks, this is really, really an outstanding book. Now, there's one you've mentioned him, but not by name, I think. But in the book, it's Christmas, and Gray Boy is not home.
Right. Yeah, and they don't have a phone, so he calls Jake at the school, and Jake has to go to the principal's office, and Gray's on the phone, and Gray is his hero, his nemesis, everything that Jake has ever wanted, his hero and his nemesis, but he's everything that Jake wanted to be and everything he didn't. He's a wild child, and he continually caused trouble for his parents, but he's charismatic and tough and everything Jake wants. So he calls him and tells him, I'm not going to come home for Christmas. And he tells Jake that he's actually in the brig, and that's why he can't come home. But don't tell Mother and Daddy.
Okay. And I guess we should mention that Gray Boy is actually Jake's brother.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry.
That's my fault.
He's a lot older. He's about 20, and Jake is 14.
Right, okay. We're talking to Jim H. Ainsworth about his outstanding novel, River's Ebb. Now, there's a couple of coaches that we've met, Coach Watson, who actually turns out to be kind of the second antagonist in the book. And then there's a guy named Coach G. And tell us that story with the basketball team.
Yeah, G comes along as a new coach. Watson was actually the girls' coach, but he had a little trouble with the girls' team, or he was actually coaching the boys' team, and he got switched over to the girls' team because the boys' team wasn't doing any good. And so G comes along as the head coach. Now, that's not exactly a position that most great coaches aspire to, but G has got a little past, and he's a little overweight. He doesn't look like a basketball coach, but he has a way with kids. He likes kids, and he's got some really good and bad history. He's coached some really championship teams, and Jake he likes Jake, and Jake likes him, and they really click. And Jake starts to feel he challenges him and tells him what he's going to have to do if he wants to start that basketball team, and Jake does it.
Okay. That friendship is very nice. And then I'm going to kind of skip ahead because I don't want to run out of time because there's some things I really want to cover. But so I'm going to jump ahead now to where Jake actually loses his virginity to Loretta, and Loretta makes a confession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I have to plead the fifth when people ask me about that thing. But they're out on the Matador Ranch, which is a huge ranch out in that used to be part of the famous XIT ranch in the Panhandle, and that's where all the kids go to neck. And they don't call it going to the woods out there. They call it going to the bushes, and there's not even any bushes. So they just go till they drive so far that nobody can see them or they can see them coming. And so Jake and Loretta, she cajoles him into going out there, and of course she doesn't force him, but he goes. And they're out at a particularly fascinating place with an old broken-down corral and wagon that Jake feels has a sense of deja vu that he's been there before. And Loretta basically leads him along until he loses his virginity. And then she has a reaction. She's kind of screams, and she says, and then she confesses to him that she has had a child before. This is a preacher's daughter, remember, and it just shocks Jake beyond belief, and he's just taken aback, something awful. But she does admit it to him, and admits her agony, how she's agonized over the fact that she had to give up a child for adoption, and she is the reason why her father has had to move to this little small town and this little small church.
Okay, and actually, Jake is terrified of meeting the Reverend Knight, and we're going to meet him next. And his Knight is a really, really nice man.
Yeah, the kids in school are mean to a teacher who has come in, and she had come back out of retirement to teach the class, and they just have Jake is not totally guilty, but he's not totally innocent either, and they run her off, and they bring in Reverend Knight to finish the year because he's also an English teacher. Before he became a preacher, he has got all the certificates to be an English teacher, and he turns out to be an excellent English teacher, but he shows up in class the morning after Jake has been with his daughter on the Matador. So Jake is a little terrified because this guy's 6'6" and 260.
Right. Okay. But you love this character as it goes out. It really turns out this man is really, really a nice man. There's a there's a funny scene because it's such a small school that I guess there's only a couple of teams that have a baseball team. They decide they're going to have a baseball team, but they have a one game season.
Yeah, they actually play more than one game. But there's only one game that I've described in there. But they can't play district games because they waited too late to get in the system, and there's nobody in their district that has a basketball team. So they travel for hundreds of miles to play these little teams like Happy and Texline and Dalhart and Hartley and little bitty tiny places. I guess the wind is just too much resistance out there, so they don't play much baseball. But Jake loves baseball, and he knows that he can do that. Then the Coach G asked him to play catcher because nobody else can play catcher, Coach Knight. And he's not, you know, his first game is a disaster, but after that he gets a handle on it and plays good baseball.
Okay. Now the Knights leave town again, and Jake thinks it's his fault.
Yeah, he just comes up. It's a summertime, and he's been very active in the wheat harvest, and he hasn't been into town that much. And he comes into town with a load of wheat, and he wants to show everybody he's able to drive a truck that has a load of wheat in it. And he takes it to the grain elevator, and he goes around looking for his friends, and especially, of course, Loretta. Makes several trips down by the parsonage, and can't find her. So he goes and comes back that night looking for her again, and then one of her friends, Texie, tells him that he left town and the whole family left town without notice, and that Jake is the reason why they left.
Okay. There's a rodeo and a roping contest in the book, which, again, it's very exciting, but there's a very sad incident there, and I don't want to give that away, but you know, throughout this book, you will feel like you're in West Texas. I mean, I spent a little time in East Texas, in the Dallas area, and traveled some of the West Texas, and you can feel West Texas in this book. Anyway, okay, let's talk about the new car, because now Jake's parents get a new car, which they really can't afford, and Jake takes it out, and there's a major incident with a guy named Yellow Eyes.
Yeah, Jake's brother just came home from leave, and in a race he blew the hood off their 55 Ford. So Jake had to drive it that way a long time, and so his parents decided to they couldn't find the hood, so they splurged for another 60 model Ford, or a new 60 model Ford, first new car the family had ever owned, and like you say, they couldn't afford it. But Jake goes to town in it the first night, and he goes to Vega, which is a little town right next door, a big competitor of the school he's going to. And he's driving down the road with this little girl he's met in Vega, and all of a sudden there's this guy comes along beside him and starts slamming his door against this brand-new car. Just bam, 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 bam. And it's a guy, it's a big guy they call Chief, and sometimes they call him Yellow Eyes. And because his eyes are a little yellow, he's an alcoholic, it turns out. And he decides that that he's going to take it out on Jake, and we find out later who was really driving that car and why he did it a little bit later. This guy's name is really Tom Horn, not Tom Horn, but Joe Horn. So
okay, yeah, all right, that's where I made my mistake with Tom Horn. Right, okay.
I can see how it happens.
Yeah, okay. All right. So now, Drager comes back into the book, and as I mentioned, he's really the biggest antagonist in the book, and he's a very good basketball player, and he's now playing for Vega.
Yeah, he got thrown out basically of the school at the bigger school at Hereford, and he's now come over to play Vega. His dad is very wealthy and one of the biggest farmers in Deaf Smith County, which is right next door. And they're in Oldham County, and he comes over to play in much smaller Vega, and he is a superstar at Vega. He was a star in the other big school, but he's a superstar at Vega. And Jake doesn't know it until he runs across him and finds out he was actually driving that car where Yellow Eyes attacked his brand-new Ford.
Okay. We're going to run out of time here shortly, but there is a part here now where Coach G, who has Jake's back through this whole thing, has a stroke, and then Coach Watson is back in, and Coach Watson basically hates Jake.
Yeah, and we don't know why he hates him in the beginning. Of course, I'm not going to tell exactly.
No, please don't. Yeah.
he has an in for Jake, and Jake does not know why. And Jake has been doing really well, and he's made first string, and he's done everything Coach G says. And then Coach G has a stroke, and is taken away, and so Watson is his new coach, and immediately the next game benches Jake, and he doesn't play for several games, and that begins a real downhill cycle for Jake. He gets into all kinds of grief with his dad, and some things happening that just really a terrible cycle.
Yeah, and there is a terrible accident with a 10-penny nail, which you won't get into. And I'm going to end the plot here. And actually, when you get to this point, I think there's about 60 pages left in this book, maybe more.
Right.
And I read books. You know, I read 4 or 5 books every week doing this show. And I'm telling you, I was on the edge of my seat through that last 50 or 60 pages. It's so exciting, and it's not just one story. There's 2 or 3 different things that happen during those pages that you will love, and you'll want to stand up and cheer, and you may shed a tear, but it is really, really a good book. And I guarantee when you finish this book, you will head to the nearest bookstore so you can buy more of Jim Ainsworth's books. So tell the listeners how they can buy River's Ebb and your other books.
Well, River's Ebb, of course, is, and all my books are available on the regular Amazon. Just type in the title or type in my name, and they'll come up. I have an author site there at Amazon, and of course, there's a lot of Barnes and Noble and several other traditional book buying sites. But if you want an autographed copy and you want it cheaper, you can go to www.jimainsworth.com. Just jimainsworth.com. And you can buy there using your credit card, and it's a secure buying place. And give me instructions, or you can email me and just give me instructions of how do you want it signed, if you want it just plainly autographed, and I can get it to you probably quicker and cheaper.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you again in a minute to give the website again, but I want to say, you know, I cannot say enough good things about this novel, but let's at least mention your other books by title so they'll know what else is on that link.
Yeah, actually, River's Ebb, I'm almost hesitant to say it. It's the third in a trilogy, but I think you'll agree with me. It stands on its own.
Oh, absolutely.
All of them do,
yeah.
Because I always don't want to feel obligated, any reader to feel obligated by 3 books. But the first one is called In the Rivers Flow. And flow is a metaphor for life, and it's the zone that you get in athletics sometimes. The second one is called River's Crossing, and this is the only mystery I've really got where there is a dead young black boy on the first page. And then the fourth novel is called Home Light Burning. All of those are available in the same places. At the first actual non-novel is called Biscuits Cross the Brazos. That's where I made just did a recollection of the trip we made by covered wagon across Texas.
Okay.
All of them available.
Okay. Actually, I'm reading one of those books that you sent me 2 books, and after I finished this book, I started reading the other one. Let me tell you, folks, if you can only read 1 book this summer, I would recommend River's Ebb by Jim H. Ainsworth.
Now, well, that's the ultimate compliment, John. Thank you so much.
Well, it's true. Now stay tuned for the second half of our program right after these messages.